Welcome again to Cubs Talk Extra Time. I am Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today will be David Holly and Mike Gregg. In this episode, we'll be looking back at the 1-1 draw for Fulham against MK Dons at Stadium MK yesterday. Both of my co-hosts were there, so we will be going through that. We'll also be discussing once again the open head coach position and the latest story with this saga. We also have a very special guest scheduled to join us who'll be coming on to talk about this situation with Fulham. Hopefully he will be joining us soon. I'm not going to tell you who it is because I just want him to join us, and then I will break that news once he is on the line with us. Looks like both of my co-hosts are on. Like I mentioned, they're both at the match yesterday. First, let me bring on Mike. Mike, how you doing?
Hi, Russ. Yeah, really good. I've defrosted from yesterday, and ready to do the show. Ready to win.
Listen, I look forward to getting your view on this match. So many fans, over 3,000 were there, and I could actually hear them over the broadcast with Gentleman Jim, so you guys definitely did your part. And David, you were there as well. How you doing, my friend?
Hi, well, I'm back on my meds because the cold turkey of seeing Fulham as they are at the moment was just too much to bear, so no more 5-0 predictions for a while, I think, for me. But just back from seeing a spectre again, thoroughly enjoyed it just as much, but Mike, you'll be pleased to hear the missus said it wasn't as good as Casino Royale or Skyfall.
Wow.
Well, she's
very
correct.
Interesting. Okay. Enough talking about Spectre and James Bond. We already had a show on that. It was actually great, and it was good to do. But listen, while we wait for our guests to join us, guys, let's just get an overall view of what you guys watched. Mike, I'm going to start with you. It was a 1-1 draw. Both goals came in the first half. The first half was definitely poor. Second half was better. Just give me an overall view of what you watched.
Well, it was a new ground for myself. I'd not been there before, and I'll say it's one of the better modern grounds that I've been to. I thought the facilities were really good. Views were great. Absolutely zero atmosphere from their fans, it has to be said. So it's a bit wasted on MK Dons, I would say. But the game, a fair result in the end, but we were appalling performance for the first hour, really. Last half hour, 20 minutes, we were a lot better. But, the whole confusion about who's in charge as a caretaker, the formation at the beginning was the old diamond. Half-time, he changed it back to the 4-4-2. We were disjointed. There was no passion. Certainly from the majority of the players, no passion. And, whether they got a kick up the arse second half or what, they were a little bit better. But two very poor sides in a poor game on a cold day in a less than half-empty bowl of a stadium. So it was a very disappointing day overall.
Let me ask you, was it a fair result?
Oh, it was a fair result. Neither side really deserved to win. We had chances, they had chances. So, yeah, fair 1-1 draw with the team that's third from bottom in the league.
Okay, very good. David, over to you. What were your thoughts about what you watched?
I'm going to join you in being an optimist. I don't say it was half empty. I say it was half full, but that's another one anyway. Nevertheless, it was a bit atmosphere-less, I'm afraid, a bit devoid of that. And it didn't really help Fulham either. We were split up a little bit as well. I was downstairs. Mike was upstairs throwing things down at me most of the game to keep me warm.
What?
Me and Mike, he was threatening to throw things over the balcony onto me. But I had to keep watching over my shoulder. But got to say, the most comfortable seats I've ever been to at a football match, I think, however. We didn't know hard plastic seats, nice sort of soft cushioned back and things. So it was full marks for that, and the view was excellent. But yeah, no atmosphere, unfortunately, and it was a very, very poor game. And, it, again, sums up everywhere that we've said before about these things. If we want to get anywhere, these are matches we have to be winning. And we weren't really close to winning. We were probably much closer to losing it, although, as Mike said, we did put a bit of a spur on in the last 20 minutes or so. But first half, the diamond just really did not work. I don't know what on earth Peter Grant was thinking there with the diamond and to bring Kavanagh in for his first match of the season, but just really wasn't working. At least he got it half right second half by changing it to a 4-4-2, although Kavanagh carried on playing. But it just wasn't the atmosphere and the intensity, you know, and maybe it was just the whole day. It was a very cold day. I'm not saying it's easy to go out there and play football in the cold. I'm sure they'd rather be in the warm like we all would, but there just wasn't that intensity or that pressing there, really. We just let the game drift by. We let MK Dons come at us too much, and we nearly paid the price for it.
Okay, very good, David. Boy, really, really interesting stuff from both of you. Okay, guys, I got some great news. We do have our special guest on the line. I'm going to bring him on right now. We will go back, obviously, and break down the match, but I definitely want to bring on our special guest right now. And, guys, I'm just going to put you on hold so you guys can listen while I talk to our guest, and then I'll bring you back on when we get ready for you guys to ask him questions, okay? Joining us now is editor of www.footballinsider247.com, Wayne Vesey, who's coming on to speak about the search for a new Fulham head coach. Wayne, thank you so much for joining us on Cottage Talk today.
Hi, Russ. How are you?
I am great. Listen, I really appreciate your time. I just contacted you this morning. Thank you so much for doing this.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. There's obviously lots going on at the moment at Fulham, and it's quite an interesting story.
It really is, and let's get right in there, because you had an article today entitled Revealed, Why Steve Clark Deal with Fulham Collapsed at 11th Hour. Can you share with us what you learned about the situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously widely reported last week that Steve Clark was very close to getting the Fulham manager's job. Talks took place in the middle of last week after he had requested permission from Reading to have negotiations with Fulham, which was accepted by Reading, gave him permission, and talks did take place. And the information I've been given, and which was in the article as well, is that Steve Clark agreed the terms of a contract with Fulham, and Fulham thought, well, were convinced he was going to be their new manager. Clark was convinced he was going to be their new manager. And then that contract was put before Steve Clark's agent, who's called Phil Smith, very well-known football agent. Phil Smith had a bit of a look at the contract, quite happy with the basic salary, which my information is about £500,000 a year, and wasn't entirely happy with the top-up bonuses to supplement that salary. So he said to Steve Clark, well, hang on, we want a bit more money here. We want to negotiate higher sums for the top-up salary. So he then put in those higher sums, which Steve Clark went back to Fulham with, and the Fulham owner, Shahid Khan, had a look at those sums and said, thank you, but no thank you. We'll look elsewhere for a new manager. And that's kind of why it fell through. So Steve Clark then had to go back with his tail between his legs to Reading and said, oh, actually, I think I'm going to still be your manager because Fulham don't want me anymore. And obviously how Steve Clark presented that to the public and the Reading fans is slightly different, but that's information
right.
I've had. Fulham wouldn't pay it.
Very interesting, because again, the other side of this is extremely different. He says he wasn't close. I've seen reports that Clark said wasn't close. You know, again, it was a conversation. If I'm hearing you correct, Wayne, you're telling me that it was much closer than Steve Clark is saying it was.
Oh yeah, I mean, Fulham were convinced he was going to be the next manager. They'd agreed the terms of contract. I mean, whatever terminology you choose to use, he hadn't signed the contract, but without signing it, he was as close as you can be to sort of being confirmed as ex-manager. And it was only the fine detail that stopped it happening. Fulham, you know, they've been quite clear privately. They're looking for a head coach. They're not looking for a manager. And Steve Clark kind of fitted the bill. Obviously, he was interviewed for the post when they had the five-man committee 12 months ago, just before they appointed Kit Simons, and they're very impressed at that time by Steve Clark. You know, he's very, very determined to succeed after what happened at West Brom. He was, you know, he was sort of really, really, really passionate about the post, even though you might not necessarily see that passion with his sort of public persona, but they were kind of very impressed by him. And they were the guy they wanted. It was him and Nigel Pearson were the two. They were the two that they sort of thought could possibly take them to promotion this season. But now it doesn't look like it's going to be either of them.
Okay, it's funny that you mentioned Nigel Pearson because you mentioned him and you've also wrote about him. What actually went along with him? You know, again, were they negotiating with both or was Pearson their number one choice?
Well, Pearson was the original first choice candidate. Obviously, he's got a very good track record of getting teams promoted and also of keeping teams in the Premier League as well. And I mean, the issue with Pearson was his PR gaffes. And what happened at Leicester last season was very embarrassing for the club, you know, particularly a couple of those press conferences and when he nearly strangled James McCarthy to death. That was very embarrassing as well. So, I mean, that was Fulham's main issue with Pearson, not so much on the football side, but more kind of the PR side. But in the Championship, that's not so important because, you know, you're under the mic, you're sort of away from the limelight a little bit. You don't have the filmed press conferences every week on Sky that you have in the Premier League. So that was less of an issue. But there is an issue with the cost of hiring Nigel Pearson because he didn't go anywhere without Steve Walsh and Craig Shakespeare, who were his assistants at Leicester the first time, Leicester the second time, and his assistants when he's manager of Hull. Problem is, Pearson might be out of work, but Craig Shakespeare and Steve Walsh are still on the backroom staff at Leicester, and Leicester are doing very, very well this season. They're top of the Premier League, and those two have potentially amazingly lucrative deals written into their contracts. The information I have from very, very good sources is that they are on 100% bonuses if Leicester stay up this season. And what that means is they will double their money if Leicester maintain their Premier League status. And as we know after yesterday, Leicester have 28 points from 13 games, the top of the league. You need about 35, 36 points to stay up. They need three more wins. And those two are going to double their money. So if you look at it from their point of view...
Why would they leave?
Well, not so much that. For them to leave, Fulham would have to equal their terms.
Sure.
For Fulham, then becomes a very expensive deal. You've got Nigel Pearson, who's not cheap, who's more expensive than Steve Clarke, and you've got his two backroom main guys, who you're going to have to pay them what they'd get Leicester stayed up. Leicester will stay up, obviously, so that's very, very expensive. So it's not so much Nigel Pearson, is he good enough? It's more kind of, well, actually, we can't afford him as it stands. You know, you look at it from Fulham's point of view, that's quite a difficult deal to do, Russ, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, again, it's a package deal, like you just said. Again, Wayne, do you think that this deal is dead with Pearson at this point?
I don't think it's dead. I think it's very difficult. I mean, what I've been told is that Pearson doesn't go anywhere without Walsh and Shakespeare, and he's not willing to take the job without Walsh and Shakespeare. That's what I've been told. I mean... The only way I think it's happened is it will happen is if Fulham agree to pay these guys what they'll get if Leicester stay up, you know, which is, you're looking at the three of them, you're looking at more than £1 million deal, which is more than Fulham have ever paid a manager before. And, you know, don't forget Fulham are in the Championship. So,
sure.
You know, that's a very, very expensive deal. And Nigel Pearson, he fits the bill. He's got the experience. You know, whether you like him or loathe him or agree with sort of, him calling out journalists for being an ostrich at press conferences, he's got a good track record. And you look at the other candidates they're looking at, he's got the best track record of all those candidates, apart from, you know, maybe a Steve Bruce or something like that. But, you know, he's got the track record and they know that. So I wouldn't say it's dead, but I'd say it's very, very difficult deal to do. But I wouldn't say Steve Clarke's dead either, by the way.
Interesting. Very interesting there, Wayne. I wasn't even thinking about Steve Clarke. I'm glad that you actually just mentioned that. All right, Wayne, you also tweeted to me that Fulham are looking for a head coach. You already mentioned that, and not a manager, and you mentioned that. That eliminated someone that already works for the club. Share with us who that eliminates.
Yeah, I mean, Alan Kirbishley's been working on a consultancy basis for Fulham since Rennie Milenstein took over as manager, which is about 18 months. He's kind of, you see him in the dugout on match days. He's relatively influential behind the scenes. But Alan Kirbishley is a manager, a traditional English manager, whereas Fulham want a head coach. They don't want someone who's going to deal with the agents. That's what Mike Riggs' job is. They don't want someone who's going to negotiate contracts with players, with backroom staff. That's Mike Riggs' job. What they want is a head coach to train the team, to conduct sessions, to pick the team, to deal with the media. They want sort of, you know, the modern head coach, which is almost certainly rules Alan Kerbishley out of the job. And Kerbishley wants the job. He's very interested in it, but he's kind of doesn't fit the bill. And also, Fulham went overly impressed by how he helped René Mullenstein when Mullenstein was manager. They didn't think he did enough to actually guide Mullenstein and sort of through the, you know, shark-infested water being a manager for the first time. Mullenstein had a lot of qualities, has a lot of qualities. They don't think Kerbishley helped him, Mullenstein, enough. And, you know, even though he stayed on as a consultant, you know, it's quite interesting. Peter Grant is the caretaker manager. It's not Alan Kerbishley. Right. If Alan Kerbishley was so wonderful, or in Fulham's eyes was so wonderful, he would be the caretaker manager, wouldn't he? But he's not.
That's a very interesting take. Again, I was surprised, Wayne, that Peter Grant was in charge of Fulham. I believe he found out, I want to say, on Wednesday, and he took over training on Thursday, which I found unusual. I want to ask, because this is going through my brain, was he taken charge because they were caught off guard because of the situation with Steve Clarke, possibly?
They thought on Tuesday and Wednesday that Clarke was going to be the next manager of Fulham and that he'd be taking training on Thursday and Friday. Yes. So, Clarke was sort of parachuted in at the last minute in that way. But, I mean, my information was that he had been taking training before that anyway, on a sort of ad hoc basis while they waited to sort out what was going to happen. But, yeah, I mean, Clarke doesn't want the job. Clark's not going to get the job. You know, I think he was quite clear about that in his post-match comments yesterday. They do not have anyone lined up, Russ. As we sit here, I spoke to a couple of Fulham sources this morning. They don't have anyone at the moment. I don't see them appointing anyone the next couple of days either. You know, unless suddenly Steve Clarke was to come back and say, I don't want those top-up bonuses. I'll actually sign the original contract. I don't see them signing appointing manager the next couple of days. It's back to the drawing board. It's back through sifting through some candidates, and there's some very, very surprising names. I mean, the names I was given this morning, you might be surprised at.
Can I ask you one?
Well,
could it possibly be David Moyes as someone that I want them to at least look at?
No, it won't be David Moyes. David Moyes is going to sit and wait for a Premier League job. He knows he'll get a Premier League job. Obviously, a few Premier League managers will be sacked between now and sort of February. And David Moyes is going to sit and wait. And David Moyes' earning capacity is beyond also, Russ, what Fulham can afford. And David Moyes was earning, obviously, a huge money at Manchester United. He was earning very big money at Real Sociedad. Fulham can't afford David Moyes. That won't happen.
Okay, very good. What names are you hearing, though?
I haven't actually written some of them yet, so I think it's best if you say to me a few names. I'll tell you yes or no. But there's a few surprise ones who are sort of emerging in the scene a little bit in the last 48 hours.
You know what I'm going to do, Wayne? I'm going to bring on my co-hosts. I'm going to let them ask you some names that they're thinking of, and that way we can play the yes and no game. How about that?
That sounds fun. Yeah.
But before I do that, I have one final question before I turn them over to you. I want to ask you this, because this is something that we've been talking a great deal about, the difference between a head coach and a manager. Has this been a problem with them finding potential candidates, do you think?
For the kind of candidates, the thing is, Russ, they're targeting certain candidates. So that immediately rules out, you know, you're Alan Kerbishley's, you're Harry Redknapp's, immediately rules those out. So they're not even looking at those guys. Whereas the head coaches, you could say Pearson's a little bit of a manager, but at Leicester, Pearson wasn't doing the contracts. I don't think it is ruling out the kind of people they want. They might have to adapt it a little bit, but this isn't Mike Riggs' idea. This is the American ownership's ideal.
Okay.
And it's not just a Fulham thing. It's kind of, you know, it's an American sports owners model. So it's been imported from American football, been imported from baseball, and, you know, and it's very prevalent, you know, increasingly prevalent on the English football scene. And also the idea of the technical director or the director of football, that's increasingly prevalent. And they're very much sort of, you know, not only adhering to that model, they're absolutely implementing that model. And it's quite interesting. I spoke to another contact on Friday, and he said to me, there's now 29 directors of football stroke technical directors in English football. I mean, a lot of them aren't actually called director of football because that has negative connotations in England, but actually they are doing the job of director of football, and that might be Mike Rigg. He's called chief football officer, but he is director of football. You know,
right.
whatever term you call it, he is doing the job of director of football. He negotiates contracts, he negotiates the transfers, he speaks to the agents and does all that kind of dirty work. And the same job that Richard Garlick's doing at West Brom, it's the same job that Lee Congleton's doing at Sunderland. So it's kind of, they're not core directors of football, but they're doing that job. So it's kind of quite common. And the American ownership, they're absolutely convinced, not only are they convinced that's the way it's going to go, that is the way it's going to go. They won't change from that, I don't think, unless there's this scenario over the next 2 weeks where Mike Rigg talks to 15 candidates and thinks, hang on a minute, these guys are not going to get us anywhere near the playoff shouts, so we're going to have to go to Harry Redknapp. That's the only way I can see it changing, to be honest.
Okay, very good, very good. And honestly, just this is my opinion. I like the fact that they do have a director of football, chief football officer, in Mike Rigg. I think he's built a decent squad. I think talent-wise, a top six squad. But again, I think they just need to find the right man. And according to you, Wayne, the people that they're targeting are still again, they're not limiting themselves. They're again, I guess you could say, because of the differential, they're eliminating others that they wouldn't be interested in, based on what you're telling me. Very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, also don't forget, Russ. This is an extremely well-paid job. This is a £500,000 a year job, basic salary. That's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. And Fulham, you know, it's a good package. It's one of the better packages in the Championship. I mean, I think Steve Bruce is difficult because, from what I'm told, he's earning £1 million a year at Hull. So I think that makes him very difficult. He wants to come back. He wants to come to London. I think his partner's from London. So he would be very keen on a London club. And it was between him and Kit Simons a year ago for the job,
right,
by the way. But because he's on such a lucrative deal at Hull, I think that's a very, very difficult one to do. But nonetheless, it's still a phenomenally well-paid job. And you know, Kit Simons knew what the targets were. He knew that he had to get a certain number of points by a certain number of games. I mean, I mean, I've not actually written this, and I don't even know if it's in the public domain or not at all, but he had to get to 33 points after 20 games. That was his target. That was the target. He knew the target, and I think he got to 20 points after 16 games, and that's why they sacked him.
Okay, very good. So, listen, thank you for sharing all of this info, Wayne. You've been fantastic. Let me bring on my co-host because I'm sure they want to throw some names at you. Let me start with my co-host, Mike Rigg. Mike, do you have any names for Wayne VC or just some questions in general?
Yeah, hi, Wayne. Thanks for all that information. And it pretty tallies with what we're hearing from various sources or, you know, online, that kind of thing. But going forward, I'll give you some names and you can say yay or nay. A name that's appeared the last couple of days is Steve Holland from Chelsea.
He's
come forward. And I'm more interested in people like Hasselbank or Garcia or Jokanovic.
I can give you some background on Hasselbank. There's more chance of me or you managing for them than Hasselbank. His name's punted around because his agent is Rob Siegel. Rob Siegel's got a very good relationship with his son, and Rob Siegel's very keen for Hasselbank to get a more lucrative job and a more high-profile job. Fulham are not interested in Hasselbank.
Fair enough. What about Jokanovic or Garcia?
I think Jokanovic is an outside possibility. Obviously, difficulty with him is he has a job with a club in the Champions League, doesn't he? So, and they're in the Champions League and for another, at least another 3 or 4 weeks. I think that's a very difficult one. But I think he's interesting. He's got a club promoted already. He knows the Championship. I wouldn't rule out Jukanovic at all.
Okay. Stuart Pearce has been touting himself as well.
No chance. That won't happen.
Thanks for clearing that up. my last bit would be actually on somebody who's gone and got a job, which was Lambert, who was always my first choice. And the concern is that we are actually going through a proper shortlist interview process and saying, okay, thanks for the interview, come back, we'll let you know in a week. And is that, do you think that's what they're doing, really, or have been doing?
That's a really interesting point about the interview process. I mean, from what I hear, the Americans are, they think they should have done the five-man committee job again. What they did a year ago, yes, you can say it didn't work out with Kit Simons, but that, I don't think that made him the wrong appointment, or they don't think that made him the wrong appointment. He didn't hit his target, probably because they haven't got a well enough balanced team. I mean, indefinitely, not in probably. They don't have a well enough balanced team, in my view, to get promoted this season. And, you know, the possibility also they might lose their best player in January, very strong possibility. And we can talk about that a bit more in a minute. I think in hindsight, if you could go back 2 weeks, I think they would have done the five-man committee again. I think that process was a good process, and I think they had good people on that committee. And what they knew when they did that a year ago was all those guys wanted to be Fulham manager. They all knew it. Whereas this time, they haven't had that same feeling that they were absolutely convinced they want to be Fulham manager. And I think you could include Nigel Pearson. I mean, Nigel Pearson was interviewed the other day, but they're not absolutely convinced that he wants to be Fulham manager. They think that he wants to sit and wait and get another Premier League job. And he probably will. He probably will get another Premier League job, because if you're, Aston Villa's a bad example. You know, if you're a club who's 17th in the Premier League in February, who are you going to look at to keep the club up? What did Nigel Pearson do last season? Oh, actually, he's worth a punt. So I think Nigel Pearson knows he can sit and wait and get a very well-paid Premier League job in February. So I'd say the mistake they made was not in doing the same models last time. So I think that was a good model. And you know, when you've got the really good coaches who've got good track records and who've got a better chance of success, then you know if they're going to come or not. Whereas they knew a year ago that Bruce wanted to come. And it was only because Hull gave him a better deal at the end that he didn't come, to be honest. Whereas now they're kind of messed around a little bit, I think, by Clark and Clark's agent particularly. So, you know, they've had their fingers burnt a little bit. And I don't think the process... I mean, I think you're right. The process hasn't been right this time.
Okay, thanks, Wayne.
Okay, very good. David, before I go to you, again, you already teased this, Wayne. Which player are we talking about that could be going in January? Obviously, we don't want this player to be going. Who are you talking about?
Moussa Dembélé I'm talking about.
I figured that's who you're talking about. What are you hearing about Moussa Dembélé? Because there's been so much talk about them potentially signing him to a four-year deal. And has that stalled? Is there something going on there?
Okay, well... Fulham want to tie him to a four-year deal. Yes, that's very true. And yes, they've offered him a four-year deal. But that four-year deal is sat on Moussa Dembélé's desk in his office, remaining stubbornly unsigned. And I think it will remain stubbornly unsigned for the rest of his Fulham career, to be honest. And that's what Fulham think as well.
Okay, very good. Well, not very good from a Fulham perspective, honestly. David, over to you. Do you have any names for Wayne or some questions for him?
I think Mike has pretty much covered it. I mean, as we've already mentioned, you know, my big hope was David Moyes, but I think that one's been blown out of the water, hasn't it? And then as a second choice, Nigel Pearson. So that would be my best hope if something could be resurrected there. Personally, I'm glad Steve Clark turned us down, and I hope that we don't go back there. And obviously some of the other names mentioned horrify me. mentioning Harry Redknapp or something. You know, I mean, it's just horrific, really. I mean, it could only be worse if Mark Cooper came. Really, please tell us Mark Cooper isn't on the list.
He's not on the list, but I've got a worse name for you than either of those, to be honest.
Oh boy.
Indulge us.
Well, here's a word. No, I haven't written this, but I'll give it to you. And here's a free one for your blog. For your podcast, Russ. Billy
okay.
Davis. Billy Davis. There's one.
Okay.
No. He's terrible PR. Oh, dear.
Wayne, I have one final name. This is a name that David has mentioned to me several times. A manager that's out there. Again, I don't know if he would be above their pay grade, similar to David Moyes. Brendan Rodgers.
He is above their pay grade, and that is very, very, very unlikely because of cost. I mean, Brendan Rodgers was on, $4 million a year at Liverpool. That's 8 times more than what Fulham can offer. And even if you've got the top-up bonus of, say, £1 million bonus if you take them to the Premier League, that's still nowhere near what Brendan Rodgers could earn if he sat and waited. But even a Swansea, and I don't think he will be the next Swansea manager because they're very close to sacking Gary Monk, obviously. But he can sit and wait for another job. And I think Brendan Rodgers has very high aspirations. And Fulham aren't part of those aspirations, unfortunately for Fulham. I mean, he's a good manager, but he won't. I don't see that at all.
Okay, very good. Listen, Wayne, you spent a good 20 minutes with us. Just thank you so much for joining us today and really talk about Fulham. You've given us a good amount of information, so thank you.
Yeah. I'll be very happy to come in again. Just ask any time, and it's been a pleasure.
Listen, before you go, I do want to mention for everyone to go check out your website. It's www.footballinsider247.com. You can also follow Wayne at footyinsider247 on Twitter. Again, I've gone to your website several times. You're doing a tremendous job in that website, Wayne. Best of luck with it in the future.
Thank you, Ross. Keep up the good work with the podcast. Thanks a lot.
Okay, cheers, Wayne.
Cheers, Wayne.
Bye now. Bye.
Thank you, Wayne.
Okay, thanks. Okay, that was Wayne Vesey, who's the editor of www.footballinsider247.com. Guys, he was with us for 20 minutes plus, but I think it was worth having him on. Mike, we have much to talk about with our conversation with Wayne Vesey. Just overall, what were your thoughts about what we discussed here?
Well, some of it's very worrying. the Billy leaves us with Billy Davis, and that is truly the barrel being scraped at the bottom of the ocean, because he would be terrible for us, absolutely awful. And it just shows that there is never a plan B or C. By the looks of it, I think we went into this process. Rick had his targets probably of Lambert, Pearson, and Clark. And one's passed, one is too expensive because of the extras, and one was too greedy. And so we haven't, we're now looking at, further down the list, and we're starting the process again. And
basically, that's what Wayne described.
Exactly, and the dreams of Moyes and all that. The reality always has been that we can't pay these people £3 or 4 million a year. That's 10% of our wages in the Championship. So, 500k plus a bonus is what you're looking at, and that is good money. And so you're going to be looking at that kind of level. But the worry is that there is no standout person there, so you start looking down at people like, Billy Davis, if you like, and Alex McLeish, all these kind of guys, all these merry-go-round managers, and we've got to think. I think he's got to think out of the box, look for a coach, and I really don't want one of these ones who's done about 5-6 teams.
I agree with you, Mike.
And just keeps going around. I want someone with some fresh ideas, and if it's back to the drawing board, then fine, but find the right bloke. But if he ends up employing just a run-of-the-mill jobber, then this has just been a wasted process.
Mike, I completely agree with you. Again, as you guys were asking him names, and he got to the name that really horrified you, I was like, oh, please. But he didn't rule it out, which was a little bit worrying. What also was worrying, Mike, something that I've talked to you about, I've been waiting for an announcement of a new deal for Moussa Dembele, a signed contract. It's worrying what Wayne had to share with us about that situation.
But in all honesty, Russ, we've known, haven't we, that it's you know, players hold all the cards if they're in their last year. We all want him to sign. All you can say is that he's doing the business on the pitch at the moment, and at least he isn't, you know, shirking and hiding. So we've just got to live with the fact that he is probably going to go. But on this occasion, we have to keep playing him. You know, there is an argument that they're going to go. But I'm not going to knock his attitude, because I think it has been first class on the pitch. And you can't blame that. You know, you can't blame the lad. Look at the position we're in. He probably doesn't even know who's been coaching him the last 2 weeks. So why commit yourself to the next 4 years? And this all comes from the top, doesn't it? You know, there's uncertainty there. You could see that in the first half yesterday. The players don't know what's going on. The fans don't know what's going on. And I'm afraid Mike Rigg doesn't know what's going on.
Okay, very good. David, over to you. What do you make of our conversation with Wayne Visu? What stood out for you?
Oh, it was a lifesaver. I mean, do you think we could talk for an hour about yesterday's match at Milton Keynes? I don't think so, actually. You know, the 2 minutes on the Fulham website sum it up, really. That was about it. So it was very good that we got something else to fill in the show and something to discuss. Obviously, we have to take it as read that, you know, the information we're receiving is accurate. Some of it's quite good, because it's a few of the people we've been dreading perhaps aren't anywhere in our firing line. People like Stuart Pearce, I think it was. You know, but also the news about Dembele, things like that, is also pretty scary. It does beg the question, you know, should we be picking him automatically, or should we be looking for other options if he's not going to be committing himself to us? But Mike's right in what he says. You know, he's most certainly on the pitch, has been doing the business. There's been no shirking from him.
Absolutely.
But suddenly, what do they do? Yeah, well, what do they do in January if he says, right, I'm off? You know, is it just, right, okay, Matt, back you come now, Matt. And we switch to playing a different style of football to suit Matt Smith, or are we going to sign a replacement? You know what I mean? Is that not something we should also be planning on now, if we're going to have to get used to life without Musa? Especially if we've already passed that point of no return, where whatever we do now is not going to get us promoted this season, which, you know, you have to say is, you know, 99% the case. We're not going to be promoted this season. Maybe more than 99%, because it's just too much ground to make up. And too much consistency that we need. So, yeah, but it's very, very informative anyway. Now, it's a good addition to the show.
You know, I thought it was very informative. I thought Wayne gave us some really interesting information. Again, I wasn't expecting the information about Musa Dembele. He kind of just dropped that. You know, again, I wasn't expecting that. So that was interesting. And like you guys are talking about worrying, but Mike brought up a good point. Maybe I'm being too optimistic. Think, oh, of course he's going to sign it. But again, he holds all the cards. Very good point by you, Mike. You know, but I want to say this. I'm glad that you both have said this. He's been a class act. He's been a class act. Regardless of what happens in the future, Musa Dembele has been a class act. And I disagree with you, David. I think he should be playing until he leaves. And because he's helping us. And listen, there might be a decision to be made in January, like you just mentioned, mattering on where we are. It is going to be difficult, but maybe, you know, again, the positivity in me hopes that maybe we'll still be in it in January, but maybe we won't be. So I guess we'll know better then. And then they have a decision, a real decision to make on Musa Dembele, what they want to do there. All right, guys, let's go back and let's talk about the 1-1 draw. Let's go back. Let's talk about the match. And we've already shared our opening thoughts. And David, I'm going to start with you, because let's start from the beginning. Let's start before the match. What were your thoughts when you saw the starting 11 and saw that Sean Kavanagh was starting?
I thought, oh, my God, do I turn around now and go home or what? I mean, what's going on? You know, I saw the line. I thought, and I assumed he's going to be playing a 4-4-2 here. But I'm thinking, well, you know, where's Kakalicic? Where's Pringle? How comes Kavanagh suddenly jumped above? But then when, you know, obviously when we saw the match, when we saw them line up, in fact, we were playing a diamond, and it was I'd describe it as a very wide or a very big diamond, because Kavanagh was quite left and Tynecliff was certainly quite right. And Kearney was at the top of the diamond and O'Hara at the back, which meant there was an awful lot of space in central midfield that wasn't being occupied. effectively O'Hara in midfield was on his own, central midfield. Tunnicliffe wasn't there to help him. Kavanagh was doing his little boy lost in the park chasing a ball round act anyway. Tom Kenny wasn't really coming back to help much. And so we really in midfield weren't getting anywhere. We weren't getting a grip on the game. So all we ended up doing was booting long balls forward in the air, and I don't think we won one of them until Matilla came on. Maybe actually Dembele won one, but, you know, and that was sort of the tone of the first half, really, that, you know, when we did manage to get the ball on the ground and play it through and make a few triangles with people like, you know, with Kearney getting involved, that's what obviously led to the build-up to Moussa's miss and Moussa's goal. But really, we was overrun in centre midfield. And I really don't know what the rationale behind the picking of Kavanagh was, because otherwise the other 10, I guessed, and probably you would have had a good chance of guessing them, because they've all been figuring regularly, you know, in the lineup. But Kavanagh was a real bolt out of the blue, and I don't know what on earth he was thinking. I mean, if he was going to play the diamond, I think he could have played other people there in that position. He could have kept LBC in, I guess, who'd been playing it last year. And even from what I saw of Matilla, he could even start in Matilla there. Matilla offered much more strength and vision in midfield than he pleasantly surprised me. I don't know if Mike was the same, but I thought Matilla looked really good when he came on.
Very good point by you on Matilla, because I actually read comments from Jamie O'Hara talking about when Matilla came on, it allowed him to be more creative. When they went to the 4-4-2 in the second half, but Matilla came on later on. So I think that freed up Jamie O'Hara to play differently later on in the match. Again, very interesting point by you, David, of bringing up Matilla, because I've been thinking about that going back to the old 4-4-2 days with Roy Hodgson and Danny Murphy and Dixon Atuhu. You know, I don't know. Maybe Matilla's more of an option than we thought in certain situations. Over to you, Mike. Again, what were your thoughts when you saw the starting 11? But let's take it one step further. When you first saw the opening stages and noticed it was a diamond, what was going through your mind?
Well, when I first saw the lineup, I must admit I had to look at it twice, three times, just to check that it was the right lineup, and I wasn't looking back at last year or seeing Kavanagh's name there. I was shocked he was there. I mean, he hasn't featured in the first team. The last game I saw him play was an under-21 game at Motspur Park, where he played on the left, then he played on the right, and, you know, as a wide right forward in an attacking three, it was just so weird. But obviously, you know, he's Grant has taken him, because he's managed him during the season, into the team. And then initially, I didn't really think about it before kickoff, but as soon as you saw the lineup and the way they were set up as the game started, and because I was quite high up, you could see straight away, yeah, it's a diamond. Tunnicliffe so wide, and O'Hara sitting deep, and it was one of McGaff's first games of last season. It was a replica of that formation, and you can see that, you know, Grant was his assistant and coach at the time, and it's clear that that's his favoured formation. So he went back to that. And it did not work. It was so clear it wasn't working. And I saw Tunnicliffe go over to, he was over on that side anyway, but I saw him at times, you know, speaking to Grant to, you know, either to want to make changes or understand what he was meant to be doing or, you know, whatever. And so this goes back to the point that he, you know, Grant was dropped in on Wednesday or Thursday to manage the team. So I really want to know what was happening for the week and a half before. I know some of them had a few days off, but it's clear that from the Sunday they sacked Kit, they should have installed someone in charge there and then, because I've never known a club not say there's a caretaker manager. Yes, it's fine saying we've got plenty of people who can manage the team within the club, and they have. They should have said, right, bang, you're the caretaker, you're in charge, you're the one the players are going to look up to. And we haven't done that. And so you have someone come in with a day's training, which would have been Thursday because they travelled on Friday, and, you know, and travelled up to Milton, please. And, you know, it was a mess. And, I felt sorry for Kavanagh. I do like him, but he's a boy lost in a man's game. And, he obviously trusted him, and that's why he started. But personally, if any player was going to suit that, maybe Pringle would have been better in that position, because we've all said he's not got the pace of a winger, so play him inside a little bit more. And
in the diamond, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're going to go that way, Mike, and what's interesting, again, I'm glad that you brought up the fact that he got into training on Thursday. So for me, this is about not having enough preparation time to install a diamond that they've not used this season, that they used last season. Like you said, going back to the very first match with McGath, going all the way back then, and you throw that at them. And, Mike, this is what was going through my mind. I'm glad that he changed it to a 4-4-2. When we played QPR, they played a 4-2-3-1. We were very successful against them playing a 4-4-2. I'm glad that he made that change in the second half, because I think it worked, Mike.
Well, it did work, and going forward to Matilla, when he came on, it did allow O'Hara to influence the game a lot more. I mean, O'Hara does play deep for us, even with Tunnicliffe next to him, but at least he's got someone quite close. First half yesterday, Tunnicliffe and Kavanagh good 20 yards, 30 yards away from O'Hara, and he likes to give the ball, move into space, get it back off from him. He couldn't do that yesterday in the first half.
You know what? And again, that goes back to this whole situation. Again, not having enough preparation, not everyone being in the best positions to succeed. Again, tough situation for Peter Grant. I do want to cut him a little bit slack, because he was put into this position in such a late period of time. But they weren't prepared to play this match. I'm sorry. And the situation has a great deal to do with that. I truly believe, guys. And listen, let's just go through a couple key moments in this match. Let's just go through them. I don't want to spend too much time. Let's talk about the first half. David, I'll go to you first. You know, listen, they had a couple of very good opportunities to score early in the ninth minute. You know, a shot by Dean Bowditch, or it could be Bowditch, I'm sorry if I said that incorrectly. And then, of course, Josh Murphy's shot was cleared off the line, you know, shortly after that. So they really had some opportunities. And again, MK Don should have gone up by a shot of Dean Bowditch, but I'm sorry, that was in the 18th minute that shot was cleared off the line. I apologize for that. But I want to ask you about this, the opportunity for Fulham in the 22nd minute from Moussa Dembele that he just missed. Did you get a good look at this, or were you too far away?
Well, we were at the other end from that, but I suppose you couldn't tell exactly how far he had to stretch, but you could see it was a great opportunity that, the ball's been pulled back for him, and all he's got to do is just slide it and put it into an empty net, and he's just got under it and put it over. And I think when you look on the replay, I don't think you can be too kind. I think, he should have been putting that in the net, really. It wasn't a difficult chance, not really. So that would have been a real bonus had we got that, because at that stage of the game, really, we hadn't been offering anything at all. It'd been up the other end. The problem for me was that our clearances were terrible. We were either hitting it long in the air, and it was just being won by Milton Keynes, and they regained possession, and we had this wide open midfield. Or, there was this thing, and Mike and I talked about this yesterday after the game. The players were very reluctant to pass back to Lewis, it seemed, especially on his left side. Dan Byrne got himself in trouble. Luke Garbutt got himself in trouble. They had an option to hoof the ball clear or to lay it back to Lewis, and they did neither, and they got caught in possession. And there was something weird was going on there, but we couldn't keep hold of possession, really, in the first half. That was the thing. And the couple of times that we did, we started playing the ball on the ground, that's when we looked quite dangerous. But apart from that, it was just in the air, and we were just giving up possession.
Okay, very good. Very good analysis there, David. All right, Mike, over to you, because, again, let's talk about the goal. I heard some, I wouldn't say controversy, but some talk about the goal they gave up to make it 1-0 for Milton Keynes and MK Dons. And again, I'm listening to it. I've seen the highlights. Share with me your thoughts about Fulham giving up this goal.
Well, I mean, I did watch the goal again just before I came on the show. I mean, yeah, Dan Byrne does a clearance, goes out the box to about, wide right. They get it down, pull it back, and the bloke puts it away. But O'Hara left his man, he's too late to go and close the bloke down who has the shot. And they had other chances before that as well. They're third from bottom, but they were passing. Again, we made a team look world beaters, and they were passing it around. They got some, they've got some nice players. They play a decent brand of football, but it was a disappointing goal. But we weren't surprised. We weren't shocked. You know, we'd seen it coming. I think Lewis had made a couple of saves before that, and it was just disappointing. It summed up the first half, and summed up the whole season again with statues. You watch the replay, we're just standing there. The only man who moves is O'Hara because he'd left his man, so he goes to try and close him down. And it's just pass the ball around, bang, shoot, goal.
You know, I saw you tweet that out talking about statues, and when I saw the goal, I could definitely see what you're talking about, Mike. But I look forward to, believe it or not, I actually do look forward to watching the replay. I will watch the replay. I want to see exactly what I listen to match up what I see, because I want to see exactly how you're describing. All right, David, right back to you. Let's talk about the goal for Fulham.
Well, this was, I guess, one of Kavanagh's really only sort of great contributions to the game. That ball came to him on the air, and he's gone for a speculative volley outside the box. I don't think it was going to go in. It looked like it was going wide to me, but what has happened, and I've got to give credit for once to Ross McCormack. He wasn't looking at his hair in the mirror, or doing his fingernails or whatever, or rolling around on the floor moaning. The volley from Kavanagh hit a Milton Keynes player, ballooned up in the air and went back towards the penalty area, and McCormack saw what was happening, and he was the first to react, and he's dashed in behind the defence, got the ball down, and pulled it back in a similar sort of style, really, for the one that was missed by Dembele earlier. And this time, Dembele's right there. He's got in there, nicked the ball past the goalkeeper, and we're back level. And it was right on half time almost, so it was a really good time to get back into it.
Okay, very good. All right. All right, guys, just for time's sake, I just want to just get your overall thoughts on the second half. And, Mike, I'm going to go to you. Just talk about the overall thoughts. You've already touched a little bit, but also, really, I do want to get more of your thoughts on that substitution, basically both substitutions. Unfortunately, Ryan Fredericks goes off to begin the second half, and Kai Vozer comes on. But I also want to hear what you thought about Matilla again coming on in the 70th minute.
Okay, so as I said, the first 15 minutes, second half, was pretty much a repeat of the first half. We, sluggish again, not really getting anything going. And then last half hour, we were a lot better. But let's go to the two subs. First of all, Fredericks, injury prone. We can now tell that, can't we? He's made 7 or 8 appearances, and he's only averaging about 50 minutes a game. Can we trust him long term? You've got to wonder about that, or does he have a underlying issue which the club should look at? Bozer did okay when he came on, nothing spectacular, but again, for a right footed player, he never seems to take anyone on. He always wants to cut inside. But Matilla did well when he came on. Tunnicliffe got injured, put his hand up, and wasn't surprised he went off. But Matilla sat there, got involved in some tackles, and we got going a bit. And like we said, allowed O'Hara to get moving. What I would say about Tunnicliffe is there was a moment in the second half when he sprinted from the halfway line to close down one of their players in the bottom left-hand corner of their box. The ball, we pumped the ball back over. Dembele was offside, so he couldn't go for it. And it must have been the only Fulham player, really, who did any kind of sprint to close down a player yesterday. And it was right in front of the fans, and everyone appreciated it. But I think that led to his injury. So a lot better second half. McCormack had the best chance, but he hit the only thing between him and the net, and that was their player. And they had chances as well. So it goes back to the beginning, Russ. It was a 1-1 draw. Fair result for me.
Okay, very good. Mike, again, I've not seen the I saw the highlights, but not the replay. How bad did the injury look to Tunnicliffe?
I'm not sure if it was his leg or his shoulder or something, but he got involved in something, and straight away he put his hand up, and he battled on for the next 30 seconds or so trying to stop them. But I don't think it's that bad. I think it might just be a strain or something. But he's quite important to us. You know, he's one of the few players who you can pretty much guarantee he's going to give you a 6 or 7 out of 10 every game.
Yeah. No, good point. You know, again, he's been solid. Let's call it what it is. David, what are your thoughts about the second half? What did you see?
Well, straight away, you know, once Tony Cliff was alongside O'Hara, we were back more in a kind of normal service, which was assumed, I suppose. And we did look much tighter. So O'Hara was able to use the ball more, I think, and it worked. And then, I think probably having Kavanagh wide was probably better because he wasn't doing anything central. He's not winning the ball. You know, he's not creating anything. But wider, at least there was an outlet there for Garbett and him to sort of use the width and try and overlap and get some balls in. Obviously, I guess the one that was the big loser in that situation was Tom Cairney, who was then stuck on the right again. And because of the fact that we then had Voza on and not Fredericks, we lost a lot of width on the right or potential width on the right. A couple of times in the first half, we saw Fredericks getting forward, trying to get in behind them. But as Mike says, it doesn't really happen with Voza. He hasn't got Fredericks' pace, and he does seem to like to come inside, as did Cairney. But, you know, the overall play was a lot better. And so this is something that I've said before, actually. That obviously, when Matilla came on, he sat and let O'Hara go forward. I think O'Hara looked quite dangerous, and O'Hara was really up for it. Even right at the final whistle, he was still charging and trying to get things done. And it often begs the question why that doesn't happen with Tynecliff. Why doesn't Tynecliff sit and let O'Hara go forward a bit?
Because Tynecliff, good point, David.
Tynecliff's not really an out-and-out attacking midfielder. He's quite balanced, but you know, we saw him at Sunderland last season, the cup, playing the holding role, and he did it really well. So I can't believe that no one's thought to do that, to let him hold and let O'Hara be more creative. But remember, I said a long time ago that maybe when Parker comes back, and some people will think this sounds horrible, but maybe, you know, Parker could sit and hold while O'Hara goes forward more, a bit like the Atuhu and Murphy situation.
Exactly.
Murphy really
Good
came
point.
Into his own. Murphy really came into his own when he was allowed to go forward more, when he had the defensive insurance of having a two
That's
there.
Right. That's right.
Whereas initially Murphy used to have to sit because he had Bullard with him. And I think to allow O'Hara more freedom to get forward, I think would be the way forward. So if that means playing Parker alongside him or telling Tynecliff to sit or even giving Matilla a go, I think that, you know, maybe we saw a little insight yesterday into something that could help. Because at the end of the day, O'Hara is all over the place buzzing around. But otherwise, there's not enough movement. You know, Mike said it's statues. We are like the most immobile team in the division, I think, from what I've seen. It's not just about lack of pace. It's just sort of lack of movement and everything. And it's extremely frustrating to watch. And it makes it so easy to defend against because we just stop. We don't take men on. We've got no one really who's going to run and take people on. You know, Dembele will do it in a short burst. We've seen that Husband can do it and Frederick can do it. But, you know, as I said yesterday to you, Husband's not our player, and Frederick's, unfortunately, is becoming a bit of a sick note. So we may have to reevaluate that. So,
okay.
But certainly second half was certainly a lot better. And as I say, I don't know if it was coinciding with Matilla coming on or just the fact that they decided to up the game for the last 20 minutes. But certainly that was our best spell of the game. And you know, the one cleared off the line was unfortunate. I don't think you can blame McCormack for that. I mean, the defender did very well, actually. You wouldn't normally have a defender there, but he read what was going on and got in the position. And there was a few other close calls as well. Better final balls, really. Again, it was final balls into the box. Voza's crossing wasn't good enough in the main. Kavanagh and Garbett's crossing wasn't good enough when they got chances to put the ball in. But certainly second half was a lot better than first.
Okay, very good, David. And listen, I'm glad that we could talk about this situation with Jamie O'Hara, because when I read the comments from him today on the Fulham website, it made me think, go right back to that situation with the Atuhu and Murphy and thinking, why isn't someone playing that holding role and allowing him to be more creative? I hope whoever comes in, the new head coach, sees that and allows him to be more creative, because I think he could really help in that role. You know, take the most out of his abilities by changing his role. You know, again, Jamie O'Hara has so much to offer. Allow him to be more creative, like you said. you know, the whole Bullard and Murphy thing, when you brought a two in, that opened up the things for Danny Murphy. Well, maybe we need the same thing now, because I think Jamie O'Hara could be even better, which is really a positive thing. All right, guys, let's do this quick. Mike, I'll start with you. Let's rate the players and also give a rating for the manager and your man of the match. Let's do it all together.
Okay, so Lewis is my man of the match, and I'm going to give him 7.5.
Okay.
With the back four, starting with Fredericks, I thought he did quite well in the first half, so I'm actually going to give him a 6. And to speed things up, going through the rest of them, Garbett, Byrne and Stearman, going to give them all a 5. I know we defended, we only let them one goal, but, you know, some of their distribution and just for standing around for that goal, I'm going to give them all a 5. Midfield, I'm going to give Tunnicliffe 6.5. I thought he worked his socks off like he usually does. And it was disappointing to see him go off. O'Hara did a lot better second half, so I'm going to give him a 7. For Kearney, I thought he was anonymous yesterday. Wasn't involved first half, wasn't involved second half either, really, so I'm going to give him a 4. Kavanagh was better second half, and him and Garbett did link up fairly well sometimes, but still I can't give him anything more than a 5. Front two, McCormack frustrated me so much. He slows the play down and, you know, throws a strop all the time. He should not be captain. But to be fair, he did play okay, so I'm going to give him a 6.5.
Okay.
Then Bealey scored the goal, missed the chance, which I thought, you know, he should have put it away, but he was stretching. But I'm going to be generous and give him a 7 if it's just for the goal and he never let that chance you know, get too much on top of him. Rosa, I'll give 5.5. Came on, did okay, but nothing special. And Matilla, I'll give, you know, in his cameo, I'll give him a 6.5 because at least he was getting involved and showing maybe he deserves a to start a game soon. And
okay.
For Grant, I feel sorry for him really if he's been dropped in it. I mean, but
tough situation.
Yeah, I'll give him a 6. You know, he's got a draw. But to start a diamond after everything that went on last season, I think was a mistake. And let me just say, some people have said bring Smith on.
Yep.
And yes, plan B. But we were actually playing better in the last half hour, 20 minutes. So do you want to disrupt that? So that's the only reason I agree with him not bringing Smith on.
Okay, very good. And I was one of those people. I asked you and because I wanted your thoughts on that. So you thought that the way things were set up, we were better off going with the way it was and not to bring him on. But overall, Mike, you do agree with me. He's a very good plan B.
Yes, he is. But we had momentum in that last 20 minutes. So, you know, why disrupt that and try and change the style of play that we were getting something out of it anyway.
Okay, very good. Mike, do you need to drop off and finish off with David? I know you have to go.
I'll stay with you for the second, and if I have to drop off, you'll notice it.
Okay, not a problem. All right, David, over to you. Give me your ratings, your man of the match, and also give a rating for Peter Grant.
We're in the cold light of day, and it was a cold day. I don't think I can be quite as generous as Mike. It was pretty dire. I don't think Lewis did much more than would be expected of him as a goalkeeper. Couple of reasonable saves there, but he wasn't involved that much, not really. Had to be sort of bailed out by Garbett for clearing the ball off the line. So for me, I'm only going to give Lewis a 6. Sounds harsh, I know, but I thought he did what was expected of him as a goalkeeper. I thought the second save he made was a bit showy, if anything, but first one was quite a good save. Fredericks, I'm going to give him a 5.5. Disappointed, obviously, he got injured. Didn't really see as much forward thrust from him as we'd like to see. His defending maybe is not the best, but he does make up for it with his pace. So he was in there a couple of last gasp things. I agree with Mike about the central defenders, 5 each. They just couldn't clear the ball yesterday. They're just either hoofing it long or just giving it straight back to MK Dons. Dan Byrne did try his best, you know. You can't fault his commitment. And I don't think the same is said for Stearman, but not good enough yesterday. garbage. I would give him a five, but I'd give him an extra half for clearing the ball off the line. At least he had, you know, the quickness of thought to be in the right place and hack the ball clear. But otherwise, you know, his defending was okay. Going forward, he didn't offer enough. I'm really hoping Husband will be back next week and maybe more in the long term as well. Midfield-wise, O'Hara, I thought he was restricted in the first half by the way the system was played. Once he had Tanakiff alongside him and then Matilla and allowed to go forward, we really saw, I think, you know, O'Hara is best. And, you know, for someone who hasn't, you know, been playing a lot of football and came here and on a trial at the age of whatever it is, 29, I thought, you know, he was quite immense at the end there. He was all over the place. He was desperately trying to get a winner for us and find a solution for a winner. So actually, for me, he was my man of the match, and I'd give him 7 out of 10, which is not a lot, I know, but it wasn't that sort of match to be giving high scores out. Tunnicliffe, I think, you know, again, a 100% performance there, really, until he got injured, but not that much to show for it. But there was that one sort of, you know, great tackle that he made. Mike mentioned, so I'm giving him 6.5. Kearney, first half was very disappointing, although, you know, a couple of nice little link-ups there. He wasn't coming back and helping at all. Big gap in the middle, and they nearly scored from a short corner where both him and Kavanagh were just standing by their men watching and not tracking back. So I'm going to give Kearney a 5. Kavanagh, unfortunately, you know, he was that little boy lost, I'm afraid, again. He was that dog in the park that wants to get your football and doesn't quite ever get there. You just kick it before he gets there, you know. He doesn't... I don't know what he really offers to us. You know, he has got a reasonable left foot when he gets to use it, but otherwise, he's reliant on people giving him the ball, giving him service. He's never going to win the ball himself. And on the one occasion we really needed him to get a tackle in to stop a break, all he could do was foul the guy and take a yellow card because he wasn't going to get him otherwise. So I'm going to give him a 4, I'm afraid. He was lost out there, and it, you know, I'm hoping we're not going to see him again, really, to be honest with you, at this stage anyway, not unless he develops.
Okay.
McCormack, I'm not going to be as generous as Mike, and Mike's normally quite down on him. Although he did set up the goal, I'm not going to give McCormack more than 5.5 because there was too much of his petulance again yesterday. There was one, yep, particularly when he won't have seen it yet, but he thought he's been fouled and we were in a good position. He's just stopped playing. And he's turned around to the ref and moaned. He's just kind of walked away from the ball. The ball was right at his feet almost, and he's just given the ball away because he's not happy about something. You know, play to the whistle and everything. Be professional. So 5.5 for him. Dembele, he wasn't really in the game that much. He had one nice little run where he got the ball and burst through in the first half. And then apart from that, it was the miss and the goal, of course. But, you know, there was the potential to be dangerous there, but most of the time there were high balls aimed at him and they were meat and drink to the defenders who were winning everything in the air. So I'm going to give Dembele, I'll give him an extra half for his goal at least, so 6.5, because he was in the right place on both occasions. Subs Foza, very bog standard, really. Got beaten too easily a couple of times, didn't use the ball well enough, but, you know, it was no particularly worse than anyone else. 5 for me. Matilla, you know, actually, my son, who, by the way, no longer wants to be called Mini Ruiz, he says he wants to move on from that. He actually thought Matilla was his man of the match, because I thought Matilla was very impressive when he came on. He looks quite strong, and he was winning things in the air as well, because I think we seem to have quite a short side, or a side that aren't very good in the air in the midfield and up front. I know we've got Dan Byrne and Stearman at the back who are good in the air, but otherwise not. But he did really well, Matilla, for me, so I'm going to give him 6.5 as well for his short cameo. Just to answer the other bit, I was calling for Matt Smith to come on for a while. Obviously, towards the end, there was less of a need because we perked up a bit, but I would have thought the logical thing to do, and I know it's not ideal, would have been to withdraw Kavanagh, who wasn't much use, and then that would have meant McCormack could have gone into his favourite play on the left of midfield or on the right of midfield with Kearney swapping over, and let Matt Smith go up there as well and bring a few balls in. But I can understand why they didn't rush to do that one. But I would have liked to have seen him. I think on a cold day, have Matt Smith come charging into defenders who had an easy day would have been a wake-up call, and we may have got something from that. Grant, I have to obviously mark him down for his strain selection and his diamond, but, you know, credit to him that he did actually second half change that and everything. Obviously very difficult for him as well. I think I'll give him the benefit of doubt and give him a 6 out of 10.
Okay, very good, David. Excellent review, both of you, of this match. You know, again, going through the key moments and obviously giving your ratings and then also rating the head coach. I guess you want to say the caretaker head coach. I don't know what you want to call Peter Grant. I feel bad for him. It was a tough situation, but he did the best that he could do. Unfortunately, like you guys mentioned, I think he made a mistake with the diamond, but he did correct that at halftime. Some managers or coaches wouldn't have even done that. He did that, so I have to give him credit for that. All right, guys, before we go, any final thoughts? Mike, any final thoughts?
Yeah, we haven't spoken about the players who are missing. So there is a question, you know, we can see that Ream was ill, so that's why he never played. But Kakanicic apparently was just told you're not travelling. Parker travelled with the squad but wasn't in the 18. And LBC, no mention of him. So, you know, I'd be interested to know what certainly the reason that the three who we haven't been told were injured, why they weren't playing. But finally, I think it's been a really interesting show. You know, the information we got earlier is a worry, to be quite frank, you know, 2 weeks into the search. And, you know, from what we saw for an hour yesterday, there's still worry on the pitch as well. So a lot of work to be done this coming week up to a very important home game next week.
Yeah, very important
Russ,
home
Russ, game. As you know, we could carry on this show for another half hour or an hour just talking about the issues we have with our club at the moment.
Mike, we could go on and on and on. And I'm sure people wouldn't mind hearing us go on and on. Great show. Great job there, Mike. Before we go, I also have to get final thoughts from David. David?
Well, I just think it's going to be impossible for you, Russ, not to say what a superb, excellent show this has been today. And I'll be expecting to see that shortly. But no, just for me, otherwise, I'm going to invite the men in the white coats round for a cup of tea now to try and, you know, make some sense of it all. Because you say we could go on for hours and weeks talking about this, really, about Fulham and all our problems, and it just doesn't seem to be getting any better. And no one's really coming out of it at the moment with, you know, with clean hands. It, you know, all the way from the top right down, there's questions to be asked about the owner, about Mike Rigg, and about who's actually doing what. And, you know, I think we should have a poll on Twitter. You know, what does Alan Kirby do? Or, you know, because I'm not really sure myself what his role is in all this. He's been there the whole time, and it's been a pretty much of a mess the whole time. And you do have to feel a little bit sorry for Peter Grant, I think.
I do.
Yeah, especially.
I do. I actually feel for the guy.
Yeah, he's a bit of a dead man walking. He'll probably be out on his ear sooner or later. So, you know, the fact that he's actually trying, and, you know, is one thing, but I've seen all these things, people saying, oh, maybe we shouldn't have got rid of Kit Simons until we had a new manager. And I know it's just how much turmoil there really is that people are even, you know, just after this short time thinking that Kit wasn't so bad. And clearly, yeah, you know, as we heard from our guest, that he had a clear target which he failed to meet and he had to go. But we knew that that was coming. You could see that was coming from, you know, for weeks and weeks that we were well behind and we was falling behind our target. So they should have really been then, you know, recruiting at that point, perhaps. They should have made better plans to put a new manager or a new coach in place, because they knew they were going to have to sack Kit Simons. But no, yep, you know, they've gone out with some half-baked ideas, and the guy that they thought they wanted doesn't want us, or he wants too much money. And I don't want him at Fulham now. If that's the reason he was coming and the reason he's turned us down, and then he's gone back and said Reading are a better setup, maybe, or whatever he said, I don't, yep, want him back. I don't want him at Fulham now. I didn't want him in the first place. I certainly don't want him now. Pearson is, you know, a different kettle of fish with its own problems. So we are really back to the drawing board, and it's an embarrassment, I'm afraid.
We are back to the drawing board. And listen, before, yeah, we go, I do want to mention one thing, and you already just touched on it. So, just to finish up the show, something that Emilio had said to me that we really haven't talked enough about. Maybe we will on a future show. Why wasn't their planning done in advance? If they, you just brought it up, David, if they knew he wasn't going to hit the target, why were they not already in recruitment mode at that point trying to find the next man? That's something that, again, you know, I'm puzzled by. You know, that's the shocking part of this. Maybe they should have done more recruitment before they actually sack Kit Simons. You know, again, it's a very good point by Miller. You already brought it up. And something that that I think we need to touch base on another show. But we really need to go, guys. Great show. Before we go, I just want to thank our very special guest, Wayne VC from the Football Insider, for joining us. He was great. Highly recommend checking out his website. It's www.footballinsider247.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at footyinsider247. Again, he's sharing some really good information. He shared a ton on Fulham today. So, again, thank you very much, Wayne, for joining us today. And, guys, you are fantastic as well. For David and Mike, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you as well for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, thanks.
Cheers, see you, bye-bye.
Bye.
Boys and girls, London calling.